Hey guys, you are listening to Sports Entertainment Center on FOW Radio Network. I'm Patrick, as always, your host with Danny Danger, and back with us tonight, Matt the Mouth. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. I just watched the 7-hour SmackDown, and I'm ready to go.
7 hours. Nice.
Felt like it.
As it can at times.
I kid. That'll be the only negative comment I make tonight.
Oh, no, I will say, regarding SmackDown, 45 minutes into it, I thought we were getting close to the end, and then I just realized, wait, we're only 45 minutes into this thing? So it felt longer, but...
Well, I mean, if that's the case, then this is like the first SmackDown since they did the split that's really kind of had that kind of effect. Usually SmackDown, it's kind of got a nice pace to it. You know, it kind of moves along pretty well. There's not a lot of, nothing really drags too heavily. It's kind of had that advantage, and we've talked about less time and these kind of things as to reasons why.
Here's what's interesting. I'm really looking forward to the Backlash pay-per-view. But I didn't like the go-home show.
Yeah, that's something that I kind of had mentioned before, is... this is the first ever go-home show for SmackDown Live since the latest split. And it's interesting to see how it was going to, it's going to look, it's going to come out. And we'll get to that in a minute. But before we talk about this week, let's go back to last week. As, NXT was sort of like starting back again. After TakeOver and after the review show, they started now implementing the seeds. A lot of stuff coming out of NXT right now. TakeOver announced for the night before Survivor Series.
In Canada, yeah.
They're also going to Canada for their first ever TakeOver. They canceled the other Canadian house shows because of it. They're going to California and doing the whole loop there next month. They're going to Japan. And, of course, why not? You have two of the best, Japanese wrestlers in the entire world on the NXT roster. Well, three. So,
four, definitely four want if to you count Ibushi.
True. But looks like he's going straight to the main roster. So
that's true. He could go with Cruiserweights.
So with all
but
that,
then they're going to Australia. They're going to Australia.
Yeah, they're going
too,
to Australia right now. They got four Australians.
All the weird places.
It's the time right now. They're going everywhere.
That's it.
So they're
they're the hot brand. You got to spread it out.
Yeah, definitely.
That's it.
All right, so this past show, we had a lot of matches. We had Ty Dillinger defeating Buddy Murphy. The Revival attacked Ciampa. Well, he kind of tagged them first, but they basically beat him up. Steve Cutler defeated Kenneth Crawford. No Way Jose defeated Angelo Dawkins. Liv Morgan defeated Aaliyah. And Nakamura, did his, had his celebration. He kind of, had a moment there where he spoke, and I like to see that personally because he needs more of that before he can get to the main roster.
Yeah.
More time speaking English in front of a live crowd. Quick thoughts on, just based on those things that happened this week, what do you guys think of the outlook of NXT, focusing a lot of their homegrown talent for the most part on this show than some of like the bigger indie and former TNA names?
I think it was interesting to do because, they have, with the draft, they lost quite a lot of people. And then they've had a couple of the people come up since the draft. Bailey's come up since the draft technically. And, if Joe's going to be injured and, not be able to compete for a little while, depending on how legitimate and non-legitimate that is. And if they're kind of trying to sell, Gargano is injured, then yeah, you need to put a little spotlight on more people. Let people know that there are more stars for them to care about, that there is a good solid roster there. and it's not just a handful of guys that are now not there, that you go, oh man, NXT is totally screwed. You know, I mean, but they did a good job of trying to introduce people and putting, and the matches had a decent length, you know, so both people were technically kind of spotlighted a little bit, as opposed to them being clear cut squashes. It was nice to see. It was an interesting aspect of the show. I mean, you saw people, Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, you know, in vignettes, you know, talking and stuff. So you know that they're going to be a force there, but people already know who they are. They're established already. This show is mostly just about kind of showing a rebuilding, so to speak, in the next batch of people.
Oh yeah.
I'll say my favorite thing about this show is Ty Dillinger. I absolutely love Ty Dillinger, and the fact that they're actually listening to the fans, and it's interesting because in WWE on the main roster, when you have a guy that gets over, contrary to what management wants, they go ahead and squash him or find a way to make him look ridiculous. Ty Dillinger was just brought in to be an experienced guy to help get their talent over. He got over himself because his gimmick is incredible. It's amazing. He gets over on the house shows. They put him in nice spots on the last couple takeovers. So it looks like they're starting to give him a little bit of a push, which I love. The fact that they're being adaptive and listening to what the fans are giving them, as opposed to, you know, going the complete opposite direction. So hopefully Dillinger's push continues, because he could be on the main roster today. I think he'd be fine in the ring, and I like his gimmick a lot. I mean, he could come up and be seamless. He would not be a Vaudevillains or Tyler Breeze type, where he'd be buried.
Or Ascension.
Who?
Yeah, there you go. The Ultimate Burial. We've forgotten their names.
Yeah, I definitely think that he came out, and the fact that he was not on the takeover show but was so over beforehand and since then, I think shows, you know, that he does have something special, because he's not somebody that they're actively pushing, but he's getting over. And I think that you can appreciate when that type of thing happens, because you don't have to worry about doing so much for somebody when they can naturally get over.
That's what it used to be about. You didn't have, you know, you had guys who had to go ahead and get themselves over.
Yeah. If you didn't get over yourself, then you were shoved down the card. Now it's, they kind of pick who they want, and they push and push and push until this guy somehow manages to get over.
Or doesn't.
And then they just keep pushing him.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? Next week, this week, Asuka will be back on NXT. I'm sure we're going to start seeing more names, you know, get some matches in here. Because we have what, TakeOver will be in November. That's 2.5 months, give or take.
Yeah, so we got some time to build.
We got some time. I mean, I'm not sure how far they've taped.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, that's also, you know, because they did like 2 or 3 days of tapings. But
yeah,
since I'm trying to stay spoiler free, I don't know how far they got.
Same here.
But it'll be interesting to see what they can do. Now, who of all the NXT people that are like the homegrown talent, you know, do you think has the biggest chance of actually making it to the main roster and being successful?
Define homegrown talent.
Okay, so somebody who did not wrestle in the independents,
or like extensive, or gain a name in the independents, basically,
right? Because, for example, I would say Patrick Clark, while he was famous because of Tough Enough, you know, people also know him with, you know, from his tag team in Maryland Championship Wrestling with Leo Rush and things like that. So I would exclude him. So I would say somebody like Tino,
who was a Tino former, Sabatelli,
right? Who was a former football player and came in, you know, 100% clean.
Yeah, because there's a lot of NXT guys that aren't 100% homegrown. Of course, you know, like No Way Jose, Ty Dillinger, those guys, you know, had careers on the indies first. I like Tino Sabatelli a lot. I saw him at a house show, the NXT house show in Atlanta, and I was paying attention to his work because I like his look a lot. He's incredibly muscular and defined and built, as you'd expect a pro athlete to be. But he actually looked pretty good in the ring. I'm hopeful that he can go ahead and come along well. God, it's just so difficult to think who really is, completely homegrown and started in NXT. Because you sure can't name anybody off the last TakeOver show.
Anybody there?
As far as completely homegrown, like little to no fanfare on the main roster or on in the indie scene. I mean, so to you, would Bayley and Sasha be considered non-homegrown because they had indie experience?
I think I would exclude them. I mean, maybe I would exclude Sasha Banks. Bayley, I think I would consider her somewhat homegrown because I don't know how much she did in the independents. I could be way off.
I mean, she did, in smaller capacities, like some of the other, she did some Shimmer and these kind of things a few times.
True.
I mean, she wasn't high on the roster. But I mean, I don't, as far as non-homegrown, like no,
some of these people have had wrestling experience. So let's say somebody who had some wrestling experience, but nowhere were of notoriety and, you know.
I don't really know. No one comes to mind to me like that is a pure homegrown NXT like talent on NXT right now. Anybody that I know of that I'm like excited for is because I'm excited as much for what they did prior to coming to NXT.
Gotcha. To me, somebody that I really think could do a very good job is Aaliyah. Now, okay. She had a couple of she did some time in the Northeast in Canada, but no one really outside of those areas. Nobody really knows where she came from, so that's why I would consider her somewhat of homegrown. To me, somebody like her, I think, could be successful. You know, she had her match against Liv Morgan. I really thought that she actually has. You know, she could probably have a good future, in my opinion. But yeah, that's a good point. It's like how many people are actually homegrown who we know and are active and will actually get over. That'll be the important thing to see in the future as you continue to build NXT as a brand. It's built as a brand of indie darlings, you know, and and at one point it needs to become, you know, performance center darlings, and right now it's not that. So I mean, that's been something I've been critical about with the performance center and with NXT is that it's so heavy from all the bigger names, and it needs to be focused on the other people they're trying to build up. So hopefully. The fact that people are getting called up more and more, it'll be a better thing. But we shall see.
Well, with what we were just talking about, you know, having to get yourself over, it's still like that on the independent circuit. You have to get yourself over. And all these guys who have, you know, even if it's just 2, 3, 4 years on the indies, you have to learn to get yourself over or you're not getting booked, you're not getting attention, you're not getting a tryout. They don't have to do that so much at the performance center, and you're only learning that one style. and it's going to be the same group of people. I mean, when I was wrestling, I had plenty of matches with guys I met, you know, an hour before. You know, sometimes you might not have a situation where you can even get into the ring and you're just working out backstage and you're hoping, you know, you're just hoping like this guy knows how to lock up. This guy is going to bump well on even an arm drag, yeah. You know, simple basic stuff.
But not just that, but also working in front of new crowds. Like I listened to the, when Sami Zayn was on Jericho's podcast, he talked about that being like the only thing that he, you know, like he will miss now that he's a WWE superstar is that, you know, like he enjoyed that when you were entirely unknown to the local crowd. They, mm-hmm. You come out and they have no idea who you are. They're not sure how to react. And by the end of the match, they're invested. They're invested in you and your character, in the match that you're telling. You've done your job and you pulled them into the story when they knew nothing about it. He said now everywhere he goes, no matter how long he's in WWE, no matter what he does afterwards, anytime he goes somewhere, people are going to know him. They're going to know his moves. They're going to know his moveset, his mannerisms, his music, all this stuff. They're going to know. So he literally just goes out there and, you know, he said it's kind of like being a superstar band, like Journey or somebody like that. You know, like at this point, everybody knows Journey. They know the songs they want to hear. They know what they're going to look like when they come out and all this. So you go see them because it's Journey. You never get to be that small, unknown band in the club. You never get to be the opener for the big act that nobody's really heard. They maybe heard a few things about, but they haven't really seen live. So he said that's one aspect that he thinks he'll miss. Now that he is, you know, a big name, and Jericho kind of talked about that too, about how you had to work to get yourself over, to get the story over, to get people invested in a match where they didn't know any of the competitors.
And that is a big deal. I mean, like I was just talking about, I mean, Ty Dillinger is a guy who came in, he was not intended to be any sort of showcase star, and he's got himself into that position.
Yeah, to where they can't really deny him. They have, you know, they have to give the fans what they want. You know, I mean, they don't have to, but they choose to, you know, give the fans what they want, at least put him in smaller roles.
Yeah. So we shall see what happens with NXT. But definitely I would say the future is bright. And the, you know, the Dixie Carter's TNA takeover continues. As Danny Danger, you know, claims. So we'll find out who the next TNA star that the Dixie sends out to NXT is. Because right now we're at, what, 5? If we include the 2 incoming, Eric Young and James Storm, that's 5.
Well, everybody's going to be jumping ship once paychecks don't clear, which it seems that there's pay issues every time, you know, that's reported every time that there's a TV taping.
That's true. Well, let's talk about something that actually that actually people do watch on a regular basis, and that's the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yes.
And the Elite Eight, the first two matches, man, I couldn't say anything other than wow, those two matches. First, Grand Metalik defeated Akira Tozawa, and then Kota Ibushi defeated the Brian Kendrick. Two amazing matches. Guys, your thoughts on the first two of the quarterfinal matches for the Cruiserweight Classic?
Burning Hammer.
Oh God,
dude, he killed him. And then his sell on it too. Like he was crumpled up and just kind of like folded lightly. I was like, oh geez, it's so nasty. And then he like kicks up and then continues the match for another minute or two, which was even nastier. Both matches were really good, but you know, it's I think I like the Brian Kendrick versus Ibushi match better. That was just, they played more story into it.
I will say the opposite work-wise, but emotion-wise, yes, definitely. Especially with the fact that they came back and showed Daniel Bryan coming into the ring for the Brian Kendrick That, you know, that's a storyline that's, what, 15-ish years in the making. I really like when they do that, because for people who actually pay attention to wrestling, that gives you something extra. I mean, because anybody who does pay attention to wrestling also knows that Grand Metal League doesn't actually exist. It's a WWE character, which is fine. We all know who he really is. At least they didn't take his mask off and put goofy suspenders on him, so that's a plus.
That's a start.
But this was, you know, every week I keep feeling like Cruiserweight Classic keeps getting better, because it is. I think the first match with Tozawa and Metalik was a little bit better worked. It felt longer. I don't know what I can't think of what the times were, but it did have more emotion. It did help that Daniel Bryan is invested into Kendrick. It did matter, and that's the thing that is great about Cruiserweight Classic. It matters. They're not talking about, you know, next Sunday at Backlash or Clash of Champions. They're not talking about the next thing. What matters is what match is in the ring. That's the biggest strength of the Cruiserweight Classic, and that's why it's their best television show. Everything matters. Too often on the 5 hours of weekly television that they have, it feels like the matches are filler, because they are. It really doesn't matter. Even when a champion wrestles, often it doesn't seem to matter. Everything matters on the Cruiserweight Classic. It's only, you know, just under an hour show, and sometimes there's only two matches, but those two matches are very effectively built. The commentators are paying attention. Daniel Bryan and Mauro Ranallo are already the best commentating team that they have. And that's something that's missing from most of the rest of WWE programming, except sometimes on the pay-per-views when you get matches that really people are invested in.
Yeah. Other than that, they have a hard time staying in the here and now. It's always what's happening in the future, what happened in the past, what led to this match, what's happening afterwards, what's happening in the next segment, what's happening next week, next month, next year, you know. And then they also talk a lot of things about things that are not even pertaining to the people in the ring.
Yes.
You know, they just talk entirely, okay, blah, 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 these guys are in the ring. Well, let's talk about this storyline about such and such where they were just talking 10 minutes ago, and we're going to recap that and give our thoughts. And no, guys are in the ring, man. That's disrespectful for starters.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely like the fact that, you know, I can watch 15 minutes of, you know, this show 50 minutes to an hour, you know, minus a couple of commercials. It doesn't feel that long. It's only two matches. And
yeah,
it's perfect. But, you know, I'm just glad they got things like this. And, you know, they keep saying the inaugural one. So, you know, it makes me hope that they're going to have more of them. You know, there's always been talk about a women's tournament.
Or a tag tournament.
Tag tournament. A heavyweight tournament, although I don't know how that would work. I don't think you have that many heavyweights per se.
That aren't already scooped up by WWE,
right,
or TNA.
But the good things is that, you know, this all leads to a cruiserweight division that starts on the 19th of September. And the names already announced. Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Gran Metalik, Akira Tozawa, Jack Gallagher, Cedric Alexander, Rich Swann, Brian Kendrick, Noam Dar, and TJ Perkins. Of course, Gargano and Perkins doing their last show for Evolve, where there were two of their bigger stars. So they'll be doing their last shows this weekend. But moving on, I mean, I gotta say, plus the few people who they have on the roster now, it's a packed cruiserweight division. In my opinion, and I kind of alluded to this last week, it has the chance to be a better cruiserweight division than WCW's cruiserweight division. And those were some big names.
What I liked about WCW's cruiserweight division, and I really hope that I still, after so many years, want to say WWF, because that makes more sense. But what WCW's biggest strength was, and Danny, you alluded this to this when we spoke on a previous show, is they kept the booking clean. Even with heels and faces, the wrestling was mostly clean. You didn't have foreign objects introduced. You didn't have tons of DQs or countouts, or they were very rare. So the wrestling, because you had, you know, all the NWO angles and the guys on top who were doing that, you know, basically every week at Nitro, they were allowed to actually just go out and do finishes. And hey, if they had 8 minutes, it was 8 minutes. But it wasn't something that was fully gimmicked up. It wasn't any Southern style, you know, yelling at the crowd. It was just actual wrestling that was untouched. Let's say that. So that's my biggest hope, is that they will not go too angle heavy and too and not gimmick it up too much.
Well, I think they need to, like, at least do some angles in order to keep people interested, because that's just the product of who he is in 2016. They're right, going to have that. But you mean, like, not ridiculously over the top?
Right. Don't do, you know, not too many count-out finishes, not too many, you know, two-minute, three-minute matches. You know, let them go out and actually just have matches. Basically, what I probably want to just see is the Cruiserweight Classic, you know, for an hour of Raw. Like they're doing wrestling on Wednesday nights with CWC.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that being said, is there one cruiserweight on the SmackDown Live roster that you like to see moved to Raw?
I want them to go ahead and give us a good definition of what they mean by cruiserweight. Because when everyone talks about cruiserweights, I mean, what is Heath Slater? What is Enzo Amore? I mean, they don't fit that CWC high-flying or super highly technical Zack Sabre, Gallagher type of style, but technically they're cruiserweights. So
Are they both under 205? Because that's the new cutoff. For CWC, that was 205.
I believe, obviously I'm not sure what the announced are, but as a shoot, I would have to guess that they both are, or they're both fairly close.
Right around there, yeah.
I mean, just by looking at them. So I assume by bringing in the cruiserweights, they're talking about the high-flying or highly technical style.
So with that, I would say Kalisto needs to go to the Raw roster. It makes no sense for Kalisto to be stuck in a land of mostly giants.
Yeah. Unless they're going to make him the giant killer, do that whole thing where he's like, that's his gimmick, is that he beats guys bigger than him. Unless they're going to do something to specifically spotlight him, he will get lost in the shuffle just over there on SmackDown by himself.
And you know who I would trade for him? Sami Zayn.
Send Sami to SmackDown?
Yeah, I would send Sami to SmackDown. Sami on SmackDown would be one of the... So he's a main event player. On Raw, he's a mid-card jobber to the main event guys.
That's true. That's what he's been on Raw for the last several weeks. You know, he was jobbed to Seth Rollins. He jobbed to Kevin Owens, you know, this past Monday.
What's interesting as I look up Sami Zayn right now is his build weight is 205.
He used to be like 190 something, I thought. So maybe now they're like, he's at 205. He's too heavy.
Well, you know, they all work. You know, they all work so heavily anyway. But you know, I think Sami Zayn on SmackDown would be like, you know, you could push him as a star. I mean, they just, what was it, 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, had him win the feud with Kevin Owens.
And he's done jack since then. They've had him do jack all since then.
Yeah, he's basically taken over the Cesaro's jobber spot since Cesaro's busy with Sheamus. Because that's what Cesaro was doing over the summer.
Right, his job is to work hard to make everybody look good. When wouldn't it be just easier to push Sami Zayn or push Cesaro as opposed to having them as setup guys, having them be the guy, at least trying that out?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. All right, well, let's move on to this week, Monday Night Raw. Another 3 hours plus a 1 hour pre-show. Do they have a post-show like SmackDown? I don't know. I stopped watching 11:05, 11:07, whenever they stop.
Yeah.
So brief, just a brief recap. We have the Kevin Owens coronation now. He renamed the Monday Night Raw the Kevin Owens Show. Seth Rollins, of course, comes in to complain about feeling cheated. That will then set up the main event for Night of Champions, where Kevin Owens will be defending the Universal title against Seth Rollins. Bayley defeated Charlotte in a non-title match. Now, she was as far as we knew last week, she was supposed to get the title shot at Night of Champions, but no mention of that here. Bo Dallas defeated Kyle Roberts. I'm glad to see Bo Dallas, no longer arrested. Or singing Lion King songs, but man. All right,
that's still the greatest story. I still love that story.
I wish somebody had filmed him singing. That would have been funny.
Can you feel the love tonight? Just belting it at the top of his lungs.
Now then, Seth Rollins defeated Chris Jericho. Sheamus defeated Cesaro, so now he leads the Best of Seven Series 3-0. The Shining Stars defeated Enzo and Big Cass. More than that in the moment. Now, Jax defeated Adam Esposito. Gallows and Anderson came out with the Old Day. The New Day quickly got rid of those guys. Darren Young defeated Jinder Mahal. Strowman defeated Sin Cara by countout because, you have to protect Sin Cara.
Yeah, he's 39 years old.
Sasha Banks returned. She was about to give us some bad news. The bad news, but were not for us, however. They were for Charlotte because apparently she's going to get her rematch at Night of Champions for the women's title. And the longest reigning Universal title champion of all times, Kevin Owens, defeated Sami Zayn in the main event. Okay, so the Shining Stars.
Yes,
that's where you want to start.
Who have been a joke, I like them. Okay, I'm a big fan of Primo and Epico, and I think if booked properly, you can do really solid stuff with those guys. You have them defeat your one of your two biggest babyface tag teams clean. Makes no sense to me. Please, try to make sense of this for me. Maybe it's my Spanish. Maybe it's lost in translation, and I'm just not understanding where in this world Spanish. It makes sense.
Puerto Rico.
I got nothing for you.
I heard somebody was saying that one of the reasons they were trying to push Primo and Epico again was because supposedly Carlos Colon had a copyright or something on Universal Heavyweight Championship or something. That's a rumor I heard, and that's why they were going to be pushing them again, because they wanted to stay in his good graces until they could purchase that trademark or what. I can't recall exactly, but it was something along those lines. What truth there is to that, we don't know. But that was one of the stories I heard.
Okay, well, that could make sense, but I don't know. If you want to give them a push, have them beat somebody. You got enough tag teams. Don't use it on Enzo and Cass.
This is the perfect situation. Like, if this was NXT television and they wanted to go ahead and give them a win, that's where you'd put like a Corey Hollis and John Skyler in there.
Yeah.
Two indie guys who are experienced. This is where you should be using the squash matches. You could put two guys in there to have a 3-minute match and put them over strong and let them get their move set in, as opposed to just going having a wah-wah type of match that nobody's really going to give any, they're not going to get over.
Yeah. They're hoping they'll get over by beating Enzo and Cass, pretty much, at the expense of Enzo and Cass.
It's just gonna take a little bit of a shine off of Enzo and Cass,
because they've been doing more harm to them.
They have been beating Enzo a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, they beat Enzo all the time, and he's over, and he actually connects with the crowd. People actually give a damn about him, which is kind of rare. And they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to do anything to get them to care. They literally just had to trot them out on Raw after WrestleMania and with a live microphone, and people were, you know, going to be into them. They were going to be over, and they were going to be players in WWE. But they haven't even gone the route of giving them the tag titles. They never even did that. It's really weird creatively with them. You know, I don't understand it. Because Cass, they just put in the Universal title match. We know that Vince McMahon loves him, and he's the poster boy for a Vince McMahon guy. But yeah, if they push Cass as a single, what do they do with Enzo? Because they don't use managers, especially babyface managers.
Yeah. So you think Enzo kind of gets lost by the wayside almost if Cass goes solo?
Or they
have to give Enzo another partner or something?
I think that Enzo needs to be Cass's mouthpiece. I don't think on his own. Okay, look. First of all, we all know that's not how Cass talks, right? And that's even I can tell that's a fake accent, okay?
Yeah.
So he's basically doing as Carmella was doing, and they were just feeding off Enzo.
Yeah.
So Enzo needs to be with Cass. Cass can be the single star, but Enzo needs to be his mouthpiece. If anybody needs a mouthpiece, it's going to be Cass, especially if they want him to be stay over. You'd leave him by himself, you know, telling us that he's going to spell something out for us. You know, I don't know. Without Enzo, his shtick doesn't work.
No, it really doesn't. But, you know, how they operate. They have plenty of guys who they never should have given a microphone to, whether they're baby faces or heels. And they've always had plenty of guys who could talk and get them out and get everyone else over. It's why I'm not sure that Nakamura needs to have a microphone for more than 30 seconds. Continue to have him keep some of that mystery. I mean, if I was booking WCW back in the day, I never would have let Goldberg near a microphone. I would have had somebody, you know, if they need somebody to talk, give them a mouthpiece. They need to do the same with some of these guys because they take so much of the mystery and the shine away. I mean, look how much Brock Lesnar speaks. And when he does, it has real impact.
Yeah, because it is limited. So when he does, you pay attention. As opposed to when they try to make him babyface his first run, and he talks about, oh man, I kind of landed on my noggin there with that shooting, trying to do that flip thing on Kurt Angle. He literally said he landed on his noggin or something. I was like, wow, that makes you sound terrible.
It's one thing that drives me crazy because managers and, you know, with Paul Heyman as an agent, you know, their whole idea was to get over guys who necessarily shouldn't talk.
Yeah.
I'm sure
for whatever reason. Yeah.
Not
their character reason or just because they're not good at it.
Yes. I mean, not everybody is a Jericho who's pretty naturally talented and has been throughout his career. You know, Enzo has, you know, is going to be over for the entirety of his WWE run if they keep his matches short and they're smart with him. But if he's not hidden in the tag team anymore, then what are you going to do with him? Because, I mean, maybe they will make an exception, but look at the glory days of the late 80s and early 90s where you had Bobby Heenan getting guys over. You had Jimmy Hart getting guys over. And I don't know, it's just a philosophy. They try to do so much and train these guys to do promos who shouldn't be promos because they're not friggin' actors.
Yeah, definitely.
So our actors are terrible athletes. They don't know how to bump.
Well, we'll see what happens with these guys. I mean, they're not getting a title shot anytime soon, so you know, we'll have to wait. I mean, they're still gonna do, you know, they have what a Survivor Series where they're probably gonna do multi-man matches again, and
traditional Survivor Series matches.
So okay, well, we'll let's move on to now the main event picture here. Kevin Owens, I think he did a fantastic job in the opening segment to, you know, tell off the fans, because, you know, right now he is the darling of the WWE, winning the belt.
Yeah.
The people tell him that he deserved it at the end of last week's show. This is the perfect time. He came in and he told them off. And got booed instantly. I mean, getting that heat with the fans was exactly what he needed to do if indeed he was going to be the heel in this scenario. I like that Triple H was nowhere to be seen, so they could focus completely on these guys, even though he was mentioned many a times. And everybody was asking where Triple H was. The fact that he wasn't there physically also helped. And I think I also like that they didn't do an immediate turn with Rollins, that he still has his cocky, heelish attitude, but that he's starting to face heels in his matches. So I think you have the slow, somewhat natural babyface turn, where he's still Seth Rollins, but now he's fighting for what's right and for good. You know, like Austin, you know, who he fought was different in the way he fought was the different approach, but he was still the same Stone Cold Steve Austin. So your thoughts on the main event picture here with Owens and Rollins?
I think they started out well by having Owens come out in, like, the corporate attire, you know? His non-traditional attire of the shorts and the ring gear, pretty much. You know, he comes out in, it's not really a suit. I mean, it's dressed slacks and a sport coat. But I think that was a good way to show that, you know, attempted change in his persona that might irk the fans, because then they go, well, why the hell is he doing this? This isn't Kevin Owens. This isn't the Kevin Owens I like. The Kevin Owens I like wears shorts and a t-shirt and beats the crap out of people. Who's this, you know, why is he coming out like this? Like he's some kind of corporate stooge. And, you know, yeah, then he's always been good at turning people against him, whether, you know, when he's given the ability to.
Well, you know what, my favorite thing about the entire show was just the production on the top when they did the whole 11:01 p.m. or whatever it said, and that whole breakdown video. You know, both Raw and SmackDown Live go ahead and do recaps too much. They'll go ahead and have a segment commercial, then they'll come back and show you what you just watched, which makes the show seem overly long. But this recap was actually really interesting and really put it over. And it was great until Stephanie McMahon came out because she was talking backstage with Mick Foley, because Stephanie always sounds like every line is over-memorized, and to me she sounds like an actress who's not a good actress, and she's auditioning for some major dramatic role, over-emphasizing everything and doing everything with her eyebrows that she does. But that's a minor criticism. The opening segment was great, and I think they're going to really be happy that they put a title on Kevin Owens, because obviously they didn't have these plans when they brought him up. They had Cena win the feud. They moved him kind of to the upper mid card, and Kevin Owens lost quite a bit. But injuries. Hopefully, you know, I can at least compliment them. They took a guy who obviously they didn't have this plan for, and they decided to strap the rocket ship and see if it would take. And I think he's going to be great. He is a fantastic talker. He can make you care. He's an excellent wrestler with his psychology and everything. So I did really love this segment. This whole beginning part was the best part of the show, except for that girl with a shy smile part. I'm sorry, Mick. I don't believe that you would say that. That's obviously some script writer who wrote that on a Sunday.
And then finally, the third highlight for me, Sasha Banks returning. So apparently she's not going to be out the couple of months that was rumored. Or she may be, and she's just going to get destroyed by Charlotte at Night of Champions. But, you know, the loser here, I guess, is Bayley, because she's not getting the shot that we all thought she was going to get at Night of Champions. And now it makes somewhat of a sense of why she, you know, had to, you know, got the match against Charlotte. Because I thought, okay, they're doing this again. Roman Reigns and Rusev. Now they're doing it with these two. I was like, something's happening. And, well, they're going to put that on hold for now. But to me, all signs are that Charlotte should retain against Sasha. And we'll probably see Bayley against Charlotte. Which, you know how wonderful it would be if we got to see Sasha versus Bayley at WrestleMania?
Well, they're not going to push Bayley to the championship right away, and they shouldn't. They should let her get the slow burn. You know, they did the same thing with Sasha. They brought her up and then put her on ice for a while until it was time to heat her back up. They put the title on her before SummerSlam, which wasn't the plan. But I think they're going to do – they'll do the same slow burn with Bayley, and I hope they wait so that they get a really big payoff whenever they do the title switch. Because obviously Bayley is going to be the future or one of the top women on the Raw roster. I mean, she already is at the top. So I don't think she needs the belt to be over, and she will get it very soon.
Yeah, so then where does Bayley go if she's kind of pushed aside? You kind of put, is she kind of battling against Dana Brooke until she can get to Charlotte? Until Sasha and Charlotte kind of get done, you know, battling again?
And that's,
you
the
just kind of put her in
short depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll probably be in the pre-show.
Oh God.
Yeah. Or a six-man tag with two of the New Day and her against Dana and Gallows and Anderson.
Could be.
Until Luke Gallows' wife decides to kill Dana Brooke.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we can basically agree that the rest of the show sucked, and we can't wait for September 19th, and for the Cruiserweights to take over Raw, and at least an hour and a half of the show. Not to give them more than an hour. Give them an hour and a half.
Yeah.
They need more time. All right, let's move on to SmackDown now. Again, now this is the go-home show for Backlash. So a lot of expectations here. At least for my end, I was paying attention to this show. I wanted to see how they were going to sell us Backlash. And so we start with in the opening segment, they have the six ladies who were going to be participating in the six-pack challenge to crown the first ever SmackDown Live Women's Champion.
And is that what they're calling it officially? They're just going to be the SmackDown Live Women's Champion?
I think that because they mentioned on Raw they called Charlotte, I believe, the Raw Women's Champion.
Oh, jeez.
It's not like she's the Universal Women's Champion.
Why not? She could be. The champion of the women of the universe.
Yeah, well, don't give him any ideas. Good thing the creative doesn't listen to us.
Just don't call them divas and I'm fine.
There you go.
Just don't call them divas.
Now, so they start out talking and then they started fighting, so then they made a six-man tag between the six ladies because we
have a tag team match, players.
We have not seen enough of those. I think we've seen the same six girls wrestle each other, I think, every week since the draft. Anyways, yes, the Teddy Long special, you know? When a fight breaks out, make multi-people tag matches.
In the opening segment, you say, okay, you and you on one side and you on the other side. Main event. They start a show without having a main event, which sounds ridiculous to me. in like a shoot sense. Like, you're going to put a show on the air nationally, live, and you aren't really sure what you're going to do at the top of your show. You just aren't really sure.
You know, that's a huge problem, I think, because you can't have any anticipation. I mean, we're just going week to week on these shows, right?
Yeah.
But so often, even the fans who show up on a Monday night or a Tuesday night have no idea what they're going to see.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the house shows are different. You pretty much are going to get the entire package. That's fine. But at the TV tapings, people walk in, they know they're going to see the stars, you know, generally. But are they just going to see them in some sort of talking segment, like Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles? Or are they going to get to see them actually wrestle a match? So it's so hard to get these reactions because the fans haven't been anticipating anything. They weren't standing outside for 2 hours talking about who they want to wrestle or who they want to win a match because they have no idea what in the world the matches are going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. They just assume that the name of WWE and or SmackDown or Raw is more than enough to put your butt in the seat and keep you interested and entertained. Which, I, you know, as time shows, sometimes you go, oh, I don't know what's coming on next week. Maybe this week's football game looks pretty good. You know, like, that's where kind of they lose out because they just go, oh, it's, you know, there's nothing specific that I anticipate about Raw. I'll catch it on the replay.
Yeah. It's definitely not the smartest thing to do as far as how you book your shows, but you know, they freak out every 5 minutes trying to put together what they think is going to be the best show.
Yeah.
And you know, they have no clue where they're going with things, and at this point, you know, Vince is, you know, keeps changing his mind every 5 minutes, and that definitely doesn't help.
That's the Alzheimer's, though.
Yeah, so the rest of the show, The Miz defeated Apollo Crews thanks to distraction from Dolph Ziggler, who was on commentary. Dolph Ziggler here mentioning as well that at some point he needs to win the big one. Otherwise, he's not sure what's going to be the future for him.
He did win the big one by disqualification because Edge used the spear. And Vicky Guerrero gave him the championship when he was making out with Vicky Guerrero and stuff.
Yeah,
so he's won the big one, man.
But he hasn't won a big one in a long time.
Okay.
And the IC title right now is the big one that he's chasing. So then we get to
the big
one. The six
anything
women,
older than 6 months doesn't matter.
Yeah, the six women tag match ends with Carmella tapping out Nikki Bella.
Oh my God. All
right. I know. That was kind of out of not really expected. And maybe they were trying to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, good on Nikki to put over the rookie.
Yeah.
I definitely say that shows that she's a team player. And I, you know, as much as they push Nikki Bella because she is, you know, the female version of John Cena, I appreciate that she's, you know, embracing being a babyface. And just go for it. You're going to be pushed as a top, you know, on the women's division. Be a babyface, and I don't think people will have a problem with it. Just don't flip-flop like you did, you know, for last year.
That was the worst thing, yeah, where they would – and that was the biggest thing right when the Divas Revolution started is everybody was saying, I don't know which the Bellas are going to be this week till they come out. And if they're bitchy and catty, then that means they're probably bad guys. But if they come out and they clap and they cheer – you know, and they try to get you to do their stuff, you know, cheer along with them, then they're probably good guys. But there was no consistency.
Yeah.
So I want to comment about the women's segments, both the opening segment and the match. I never have a problem watching NXT or the Cruiserweight Classic or any indie stuff like PWG with my wife. She's fine watching it. But when I watch one of the two main roster shows, I can get embarrassed really easily. And I wrote down something she said. She said after the opening segment, the women.
Yeah.
And I wrote it down in quotes. She said, "Why does it have to be so bad?" And that was her commentary after watching the opening promo segment where, oh, guess what? Everybody comes out individually. That's great. Oh, and Carmella came out to complete silence, by the way.
Did you tell her?
She came out to complete silence when she was a babyface too, though. So that's not that much difference.
So when your wife asked that, did you tell her that we were wondering the same thing for the past 10 years?
It's tough because I have been telling her, you know, I talk about how so many of these women are good, and I want her to actually be a little bit interested in it because she will watch wrestling, and she gets interested in it when it's the action. When it's with a microphone,
she kind of tunes out.
But it's so bad. I mean, it's reality TV show level bad. And this is, to me, this is a big thing of why ratings are horrible. I mean, I would like to see a new counter started every week at what minute we get the first match at. Is it 20 minutes in? Is it 15? Is it 25 minutes in before the bell rings to start the first match? It's just the whole thing of it was bad. When it comes to the women, the only interesting thing are their entrances. And I'm a big fan of the, and I hate the terminology they use, this whole revolution, like women's wrestling wasn't a thing back in 1992 in Japan. Yeah, like,
well,
that never.
Well, now is the women's evolution.
Like women have never been wrestling. It's almost never. Offensive. Yeah, it's. I watched All Japan Women and some of the other promotions from Japan, 15 years ago. Which is fine. I know this is WWE history, but there's also been plenty of women around who actually could go. They just never cared about it. And, looking around, the closest thing they have to an Aja Kong or a Bull Nakano is Nia Jax. And Nia Jax is a really pretty looking woman. So it just seems like a bunch of catty women who are arguing at each other, and that is boring as hell, and they are so much better than that. Becky Lynch is better than that. I mean, she's the star of this six-woman division, which is ridiculous. But, I mean, even Alexa Bliss is better than that. Nikki Bella, Natalya. I'm ranting and not making any sense, which is pretty appropriate considering the subject matter.
Oh yeah, but it's okay. We're okay with rants, especially after my latest, which is available on Outside the Fed on FOWradio.podbean.com and iTunes.
We appreciate rants. Especially when we feel similar, and that's one of the biggest. That was the biggest problem with the Divas, is they were just catty women. There were like three characters that you women had. They were the hot chick who was cute and lovable, and and then there was the bad girl who was kind of a mean bitch, and then there was the bad girl who was crazy. That was like they were one of those three, or they weren't on TV,
And sometimes like, one was all three.
Yeah, sometimes they were all three. They just kind of flipped around, So, they're starting to branch out. Yet again, there is still a lot of work to be done. And I think when you put so many people into a ring to talk anyways, whether they're skilled talkers or not, it gets kind of muddy. Because each person is only allotted to say so much, so nobody's really telling any story. And especially when you put, women in there who realistically still a large portion of the male population just wants to see roll around and catfight on the ground like the old ECW days. So yeah. They're facing a lot of uphill battles, but I think they are moving in a better direction than they were 2 years ago.
I hope so, because they are so much better than this.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
They are.
They really are.
Now, continuing with the show, we had the American Alpha quickly defeat the Usos. The Usos then turning heel, attacking Chad Gable, and more on that in a little bit. So the American Alpha advances to the finals for the tag title tournament at Backlash. Then Fandango is hitting on some lady who I guess some plant from the crowd, tattoos, they're about to start dancing, and out comes Kane. I think this is about the only time I ever cared to see Kane in the last few years. Put the segment to rest. Then we get the main event match. And this is the main event match for SmackDown. Heath Slater and Rhino defeating the Hype Bros. So now Heath Slater and Rhino will move on to the finals of the tag title tournament against American Alpha at Backlash. And then we end the show with WWE World Champion Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles just going at it with each other, you know, in the talk segment ends with AJ Styles kicking Dean Ambrose where the sun don't shine, leaving him laying. And that's how the show ended. We find out then on Talking Smack that, unfortunately, Chad Gable's knee is, you know, is too hurt. And they're out of the tournament. So now we're going to get the Usos versus the Hype Bros at Backlash. The winner will face off against Heath Slater and Rhino later that night for the tag titles.
What a weird way to do this. Was he hurt in the angle? I mean, he couldn't have already been hurt, was he?
No, he wasn't hurt. It was all to keep American Alpha from winning the titles. If you look at it now, Heath Slater and Rhino are winning this thing. Heath Slater's getting that contract. The only thing stopping Heath Slater from winning this tournament and being able to get the contract was American Alpha. No way are you beating American Alpha.
Right
now they're the hottest thing on SmackDown.
And no way are you putting the tag titles on the Hype Bros.
You know, last time we talked, I said that they should have American Alpha chase as opposed to putting the belts on them right away, and I thought that the Hype Bros should win it. But this Heath Slater storyline has really been interesting, and one of the best things that WWE as a whole is doing. Because it's just first of all, Heath Slater is treated as a joke, but he's actually an excellent in-ring wrestler. He can really go, so that's strange. But it endears, for some reason, he's endearing to people, I think. So I credit them for seeing this through. But it's just such an odd way to do it. Why not do a DQ finish where American Alpha loses or something? It just seems like such a letdown because of how they won. You know, American Alpha won the match, and they won very quickly in about a minute and a half or so.
Yeah, I definitely see something here happening where Heath Slater and Rhino will probably win this match, and then, you know, the Usos will eventually take it from them, and then American Alpha will chase the Usos. I can see something like that happen.
I hope that they have the odd couple with Heath Slater and Rhino. I hope they keep giving them a push. It's interesting. It's interesting. I like the Hype Bros a lot, but when you come up with something creatively that kind of takes off and has a lot of interest, you have to go with it, even if it wasn't your plan. You know, kind of the opposite of Roman Reigns. You know, when people are interested in something, even if it wasn't your plan. Like Seth Rollins, even though Seth Rollins was obviously not supposed to be a babyface, when he came back, he got a giant babyface reaction. That Sunday night and Monday morning, you have to go ahead and change it. Because now when you do it two months later, it's kind of cold because people are already rooting for him and you already fought the people on them. So I hope so. I hope that's what happens. I mean, American Alpha doesn't need the belt yet. You don't need to take up not everybody needs that Finn Balor push where you make the star in one night and then give him a belt a month later.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, so now coming off of SmackDown Live, how did they do? Did they get us excited for Backlash? I feel the same I did. I look forward to Backlash, but SmackDown Live didn't do anything to make me be like, cannot wait to see Backlash.
Well, as we've talked, the way that the shows and the television shows and all this is structured, it seems like they've kind of taken away the whole aspect of must-see live network specials. Because they are, you know, they already have your money, okay? They're not trying to vie and change your mind last minute for you to decide to pay $50 to see this show. So it's a whole different model. Like it's just a continuation of the same story. It might as well just, you know, a never ending book. And this is just the next chapter. There's nothing final happening here. There's no closing of the story. There's no storylines that are being closed. There's no new storylines that will potentially open. It's just a continuation of this never ending story.
How about you, Matt? Are you excited? Are you more excited about Backlash because of SmackDown Live's Go Home show?
Okay, my thoughts are on SmackDown Live, and it seems weird that we say SmackDown Live. I guess they're going to keep that going for a while.
That's his name now.
I know it's strange, but I guess they got to differentiate after 15 years of SmackDown being on not live. It's weird. I didn't think this was a great show. The highlights to me is I noticed I was really much more interested in seeing The Miz and have been since his promo on Daniel Bryan 2 weeks ago when he went off on Talking Smack. And it went viral for good reason. And it's irrelevant whether it was a work or a shoot. I mean, obviously, it wasn't a shoot. It's irrelevant because they let The Miz talk in a great environment with a ton of passion, which their promos seem to miss. Most of the guys who go out there and deliver these 5-10 minute segments don't speak with a ton of passion, and you can't, because that Miz promo had a heart of about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, where he was really going, and had that, you know, he wouldn't have been able, had the same reaction had it been 8 or 10 minutes. Or if somebody else's entrance music went off. So it's interesting that made me more interested in The Miz, and I'm hopeful that that keeps up. The Usos turned heel, which is about time. It's disappointing we won't get to see American Alpha, but I really am actually interested in the show, in the pay-per-view. Backlash, it's kind of... It had a really cool segment at the end with Ambrose versus Styles, and I was surprised they didn't end with some sort of match. But I'm interested to see how Dean Ambrose can hang with AJ Styles. I mean, I'm assuming that he can, because John Cena hung with AJ Styles really, really well. I'm hopeful they book the six-woman for the SmackDown Championship. I hope they book that six-man good, because you have a lot of, you know, you have several good workers in there, and you have several inexperienced workers in there. And basically what I'm saying by that is Carmella should be gone in 30 seconds.
Yeah, well, let's take a look at Backlash now, and it's going to be full prediction time. All right. And we're going to see, you know, how well we do here. First, let's start with the Usos versus the Hype Bros. The winner goes on to face Heath Slater and Rhino for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Danny, who you got?
Oh, Usos.
Okay, and quick follow-up. Who wins the finals?
Slater and Rhino.
All right.
Jason Jordan comes out to distract the Usos. Because Chad Gable can't be there. That keeps therapy going.
Matt?
When you say predictions, do you mean what I think will happen?
Yes.
Or what I want to happen?
What you predict either will or. Happen. Or either, okay. Yeah, or you can specify what you want.
Wishful thinking or true prediction.
Okay.
Mix it up. I usually do.
Okay. I think it's going to be the Usos over the Hype Bros. And then Heath Slater will get some sort of, one of them slipped on a banana peel thrown by Jason Jordan. you know, hope some sort of fluke victory, which it should be. It shouldn't be a strong finish, but a fluke victory to tell a great story. They set it up, you know, this week he had the whole family at ringside. I assume they're going to do that at Backlash, and they could do a fun celebration. Because actually the Heath Slater stuff is interesting, and there's not a ton of stuff, and there's not a ton that is interesting on this show.
Yeah.
Usos turning heel is potentially a good thing.
It's going to be the best thing for them right now. And hopefully their cousin will follow suit.
No, he won't.
Their cousin? Who is their cousin? Sasha?
Roman.
Tamina Snuka.
I agree with the two of you completely. I think that Usos are going to the finals and then losing the titles, the title match to Heath and Rhino. Next, for the Intercontinental title, The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler. I'm going with the Zigzag Man himself here. Dolph Ziggler is going to be your new Intercontinental champion.
I have had, like I was just saying, I have a renewed interest in The Miz. I hope they let him speak and they write less for him so he can improvise more. I'm interested in that Miz character, and I hope he keeps the belt. Because I just don't see, even if Dolph gets it, will he just challenge for the big belt at SummerSlam, you know, way underneath? He's, you know, a consolation Intercontinental Championship prize isn't going to do much for him. They need to really rehabilitate him, give him a complete character change. But I'm enjoying The Miz. Keep things status quo.
Yeah, with the way they kind of had that big fiery, like you said, the fiery Miz promo, you know, it's generated a lot of buzz. It wouldn't make sense to take the title off him now and kill that buzz. I think you need to keep the belt on him for at least a while longer.
All right, moving on. The Viper, Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt.
In a who jobs faster match? Is that what this is?
It's something.
I don't possibly see how you don't put Randy Orton over Strong.
Yeah, it has to be Randy.
Yeah, I'm going with Randy as well.
I mean, he had a skull crushed in.
He deserves it after doing what he did for Brock.
That's what I'm saying. He had a skull crushed in by Brock Lesnar. And supposedly it was like kind of shoot style. Like he was like supposed to hardway him, and then Brock kind of clubbed him and bashed his skull in instead.
Oh, I never thought that was a shoot. I just thought it was stupid.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, it's not a shoot. I mean, Randy Orton knew what was going in, but, like, the story is that he didn't find out till, like, that evening. And he was, you know, the refs weren't in on it. The medical team wasn't in on it to try to get authentic reactions. You know, the only people who knew were, you know, the creative people involved, Lesnar, Heyman, and Randy. That's the story that I've heard. That's because they wanted to keep it as an authentic as, like, everybody just go, holy crap, did that just happen? You know, like, they wanted to keep that. Is this real? Is this, you know, the shoot? Is this work? Is the shoot? Is this work?
Yeah. And then we remain here. The consensus, we all are Team RKO.
Yeah,
so it seems, yeah.
All right, so then we get the six-pack challenge for the WWE Women's Championship. Alexa Bliss versus Becky Lynch versus Carmella versus Naomi versus Natalia versus Nikki Bella.
Have they specified rules? Is it single fall elimination, or is it is it single pinfall, single fall wins it, or is it like elimination style?
It's elimination, and I wrote this down. Daniel Bryan did the deal where he talked about, you know, there's six women, and then there'll be five, and then there'll be four. It was a really goofy way, because if you've got six, I mean, you're not really going to do, like, triple threat rules, right? And first pinfall.
You could. I mean, that's how they did that big Hell in a Cell back in the day, the six-man Hell in a Cell.
The Elimination Chamber?
Yeah.
You eliminated him one by one.
This was the one where Rikishi got chokeslammed off the cage in the back of the truck. It was only single pinfall. And there were six of the top stars, blah, 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 blah.
Right. And they do it like that so the other, you know, so other stars don't have to take pinfalls. But
and they can build the drama of guys breaking up pinfalls and things like that.
But I mean, I think that's the way to do it is the elimination style. So.
Okay, so who's your survivor then? If it is in fact elimination style, who's your survivor?
I'm going with my heart and Becky Lynch. I'm sticking to my heart.
I thought you said Natalya.
Well, my mind says Natalya. My heart says Becky. I'm going with one from each faction.
I gotcha. Okay. Well, for the match's sake, I hope that Carmella does not last long for crowd reaction and crowd interest.
But she just submitted Nikki Bella.
I know. So
that's live on TV. Yeah.
Live on SmackDown Live.
That would have been the least predictable result for that match. They made Becky be the face of the division. They made her the number one draft pick and everything. And they specifically pointed it out in the beginning of the promo that she was the number one pick. If it's me, I would go ahead and put the title on Becky Lynch, but I have a feeling it's going to be like Natalya. Because they'll let Becky Lynch chase her for a while.
All right.
They can redo that. And then you get a month or two out of matches out of it at the house shows. And then she wins some, you know, whatever. If you can gimmick a match however you want.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I've always liked when they added stipulations that are like pinfalls count anywhere or no count outs or stuff like that. Because I think that adds a little bit more drama without making it more dangerous, and it doesn't do too much.
Yeah. Without making it like a ladder match where they can break their leg and stuff really easily. You just say there's no time limit, you know.
But I'm more than happy to have Alexa get eliminated and drive down from Richmond and watch the rest of the show with me and my wife. I love Alexa Bliss, and I think she could be a star in this division someday. I have the schoolboy crush on Alexa Bliss.
Danny?
I gotta go with straight fire! I gotta go with Becky. Yet again, she's pretty much the one that they've kind of even until Sasha came back, she was pretty, you know, they gave Sasha the big push. Becky Lynch was the number one face in WWE in the women's division across the board. So I think it's time to do, you know, time for her.
Yep. And so then we go into the main event of the evening, which it will be for the WWE World Heavyweight title, which is still lesser than the Universal title. Let's remember that. And Dean Ambrose will defend versus the phenomenal one, the man that runs this place. I think they didn't say that enough on SmackDown this week. AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with the phenomenal one. That's my pick.
I am not, because I think there is a lot more life to this. Yeah, if it's me booking, I'm doing some sort of, you know, I actually wouldn't mind a double DQ or double count out where it just gets so heated, you know, they got to they don't do these type of things often, but you know, it gets so heated, you got to pull guys out, you just throw the match out, no contest. And then, you know, then at No Mercy, or maybe even at Survivor Series, then you give AJ the strap. You let this feud play out for a while. I would like for it to be a little bit more of a chase than AJ beats Cena, then immediately goes into beating Ambrose. I think there's a little bit more you could do with storytelling, and plus AJ could have some, you know, could have some really good matches on the way.
I'm still not sure when and if they're going to give the belt to AJ, so I think they're going to keep it on Dean for right now. I think Dean Ambrose retains.
All right.
Yeah, I mean we're agreed that AJ probably before the year is out is going to be the champ, right?
Yeah, it's going to be like champion of both shows at the same time, yeah.
So instead of if they should do it, it's you know, it's when and how they're going to do it.
Yeah. So it seems.
So I mean, I'm looking at the schedule right now.
Elimination Chamber. No.
Halloween, I'm looking at the December 4th, 2016. It's a SmackDown pay-per-view, tables, ladders, and chairs. Dean Ambrose and AJ Styles could have a heck of a match. You know? Or if they're going to do whatever they're going to do with Survivor Series with teams, they could. That would be, I think, a marquee match that they could build up. Because you could take guys who you might not necessarily take. They ruined some of these matches by putting them up on small pay-per-views with 3 weeks of build. There's matches who could, you know, do the old traditional headline a big pay-per-view like a Survivor Series, but they just don't get that opportunity because that's...
You've seen the match seven times by then.
Yeah, and it's 5 hours of live. It's 5 hours of live TV. If you're not really doing squashes, you know, you've got to have somebody wrestle. But I would add more guys. See, this is the NXT problem that they don't have. They can go ahead and have their job guys, you know, get fed to the guys with belts, the guys who are over at the top of the card. They can recycle guys through, and they're not wrestling every week. Yeah, you got to keep AJ and Dean on TV every week, but I'd stretch it out. Stretch it out maybe to TLC.
It could be definitely a possibility. And so looking at the pay-per-view schedule, as we now got to take a look at Backlash and made our predictions, tentatively, right? I haven't seen anything superficial, but this is about the only list that's been going around. For October, it looks like SmackDown is getting No Mercy. They're bringing all these old recycled names and they're giving them to SmackDown for the most part, mm-hmm. which is fine. I said bring some of the old WCW names. I was always a fan of Super Brawl, Halloween Havoc,
and Bash at the Beach,
Starcade.
Hog Wild, baby. They're bringing back Hog Wild. They're going to Sturgis.
Not quite. Raw will get Hell in a Cell in October. Then Survivor Series will be a co-branded pay-per-view special. Then in December, SmackDown Live will get TLC. And Roadblock will be given to Raw.
Jeez.
Yeah. So that's definitively now looking at other things going on WWE related and whatnot. I do want to bring up on WWE Network, they finally put out a few what they like to call hidden gems, also known as, hey, we've had this all along, just didn't realize we did, but we're putting it out now. And in them, there is a wonderful match that, not WWE likes to say is what inspired the Hell in a Cell concept, but whatever. And that was the last battle of Atlanta. Tommy Rich and Bo Sawyer nearly killed each other. I watched it this morning as a raft, not too long after it came out on the network. You know, it was a fun match, and then seeing Ole Anderson, you know, for the brief time he was huge babyface, you know, destroy Paul Ellering, that was also really fun to watch. So I definitely encourage everyone to check it out, Last Battle of Atlanta. You'll need to put that in the search, on the search option there on the network to watch it.
I found it. I got to go ahead and actually check it out. But I saw another match that I started to watch first. It's a guy named Seth Rollins versus Cassius Ohno.
The original KO.
I want to really check that match out. And then I'm going to watch the Battle of Atlanta. I didn't grow up here, so that wasn't the big mythic match for me. But I'm still really interested in it because I saw the PWI magazine pictures and such like that.
Oh, yeah. And also, I believe The Undertaker versus The Unabomber from Smoky Mountain is also one of those hidden gems.
Yes, it is.
So, I mean, there's a few good stuff in there. So, definitely check out the hidden gems of, you know, of things that they really realized they had and forgot to put in.
Yeah.
But whatever, they're there. And lastly, I don't think that we can close off this episode without speaking of one CM Punk. All right, so he's no longer with WWE, but he last worked for WWE. And this Saturday, finally, as long as he makes weight and or doesn't get injured before Saturday, knock on wood, he will have his first mixed martial arts fight inside the Octagon for the UFC against Mickey Gall, who's, I believe, what, 2-0 or 3-0, somewhere in there. It's really, really, really non-sequential. But, however, how do you guys think CM Punk's going to do? I mean, are you guys rooting for CM Punk? Do you guys even care? Are you guys done with CM Punk? Or did you just never cared? I, myself, love CM Punk. I will probably most likely will be wearing my CM Punk t-shirt on Saturday. And I will be for sure watching him hopefully win by TKO.
Anaconda Vice.
You know, I wish, but no, I don't think that's going to happen.
I think he has a better chance at Anaconda Vice than he does by TKO with strikes, given from what we've seen in his training videos.
True, but keep in mind that those training videos are from like over a year ago. They haven't shown anything recent.
That's true.
I think that Mickey Gall is going to go up to CM Punk and punch him in the face, and he's going to do that very hard, and then the fight will be over.
You think it's literally Mickey's going to hit him one time and Punk goes down?
Sure. I don't think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be a long match. It's probably going to be. I think the hope is that it's not an embarrassing match. I really do hope it's not. It's not embarrassing
for professional wrestling as a whole. Yeah, because then they don't say, "Oh, that's because they fight that fake shit. They don't know how to real fight."
I mean,
terrible wimps.
Think about Brock Lesnar's first match, or not his first match. Think about his early matches. Even when he lost, even when he got beat down, he was a fighter. But then think about when he fought Overeem and he quit. He was basically crouched in a corner getting wailed on, and that was kind of embarrassing.
Yeah.
Well, that will be happening this Saturday on pay-per-view. UFC 203 from Cleveland, Ohio. First time in Cleveland. And it'll be CM Punk versus Mickey Gall and many other good fights, including a heavyweight title fight. That shall be fun. Really good to see. And something would be funny, with everybody getting popped with testings, it'd be funny if he got popped for something, being that he's straight edge. But, he may be taking a supplement that, you know, he may not know had something in there. Then again, he might not.
My thoughts, or at least my interpretation of Straight Edge, is he wouldn't take a supplement.
I guess I don't know much about the Straight Edge lifestyle to say.
There's varying differentiations. There's vegan Straight Edge, which is like you literally abstain from sex and you don't eat any animal byproducts. You don't take anything. Like, you don't even take Tylenol, you know, like, and then there's just Straight Edge where you don't do illegal drugs or you don't drink alcohol. You know, anything that's prescribed to you by a doctor is okay. But then there's some Straight Edge where, you know, anything that is not meant to originally be in your body does not enter your body. You know, like, that's where you go vegan Straight Edge, and you only supposed to eat like natural foods and all this without all these chemicals and all this crap. I mean, I've seen the guy drink caffeine before, so I don't know how deep his stuff goes. I mean, he drinks Pepsi, is the big, you know, Pepsi has caffeine. That some people, that's considered a drug.
But I mean, you know, my interpretation, my understanding is that it's pretty hardcore. So I'm just, we'll see. I'm curious. Yeah. I hope he passes the test.
Well, yeah. I know many people are curious, and definitely, you know, those who are, check it out. And with that, that is today's, this week's episode of Sports Entertainment Center. As always, fans, check us out. We are on social media, on Facebook at FOW Radio, also on Twitter at FOW Radio. Matt's on Twitter at Matt the Mouth. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And also, don't forget, subscribe, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Podbean. Soon to eventually come on Google Play. And until next time, for Danny Danger, Matt the Mouth, I'm the Yellowman. Keep watching wrestling.